Hi everyone, it's Deb. Welcome to Starving for God BBA workshop, looking at our food and our body issues. And we are today in the second half of There Is a Solution. And I love this chapter so much. So I'm really, really excited to dive into this. Before we get started, though, I would love for whoever is on the line to introduce yourselves. So I'll just start. I'm Debbie from San Diego, and I'm a compulsive eater, restrictor, addict, Al-Anon chaos creator. I got a whole bunch of stuff going on. Who else do we have on the line here today?
Hi, it's Lynn from Sherman Oaks, and I'm a compulsive overeater and a drug addict. Happy to be on the line.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm from San Diego. I'm a compulsive overeater, binger, also bulimic, and alcoholic and drug addict.
Hi, Tammy. Hello, hello.
Hey.
This is Lauren, compulsive overeater and debtor in Encino, California.
Hi, Lauren. Glad you're here.
Hi, this is Jan from Burbank. I'm a compulsive overeater. I am an Al-Anon and sometimes chaos creator, and glad to be here.
Awesome. Thanks, Jan.
Deb, can you hear me at all? It's Cheryl.
Yeah. Hello. Yay,
hi.
Hello. Hi.
Okay, so my thing is telling me that when it says muted, I'm actually unmuted.
Weird.
Okay. Weird. It doesn't matter. We've figured it out. So I just know I have to silence myself when it comes to the meeting and not listen to what the little bloopy's telling me.
Okay. So do you want to... So where are you calling from and how do you identify?
Okay. I'm Cheryl, compulsive overeater from New Zealand, and I'm also alcoholic.
Awesome. Glad to have you here.
Thanks. Shall I do mine? It's Christiana.
Hi, Christiana. You're on.
Hi, I'm from New Zealand, and I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic, and alcoholic.
So glad that you're here.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Hi, this is Stephanie. I'm calling from the Bay Area. I'm a food addict and Al-Anon.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hello. It's Lisa from Atlanta.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, this is Amy. I'm a food addict, alcoholic, drug addict, sex and love addict from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hi, Amy. Great to have
Hi.
You here.
Hi, this is Deb from San Diego, a compulsive overeater addict.
Hi, Deb.
Hi, this is Judy. I'm a food addict, drug addict, and alcoholic from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, Judy. I know we have one or two more people on there because they already introduced themselves before we started the recording. Okay, well, we'll get started. So we are today beginning in the mental obsession. And so we get to say a new set-aside prayer. So if you'd like to turn to the front of your book where you've transcribed your set-aside prayer, today we're looking at my mental obsession before I start to either compulsively eat or restrict. So we'll go ahead and say that prayer, and then we'll go into about 5 minutes of meditation. So God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my mental obsession before I start to compulsively eat or restrict.
Anyone there?
Yeah, we just finished our meditation. Welcome. Go ahead and you can go ahead and start. So who is that, by the way? You want to announce yourself? Oh, that person already jumped off the line. Okay, so I want to just back up for, well, actually, let me do a little bit of, are you guys okay hearing? I'm just going to share the homework at the end of the meeting. There's going to be some logistical things that I want to review, but I feel like now that we said our prayer and meditation, I feel really inspired to move into the content. So I will address those logistical things at the end of the call. As I was meditating, I just got this image of the group of us that are here on the call, and even the group of us, the extended group of us that listen to the call afterwards, that listen to the playback. And I just got this actual visual image of us all sitting in circle together, whether it's a sistership circle or a brotherhood circle or a fellowship circle, however you want to call it. I just got this image of each one of us sitting there at home or in a quiet place with our book, with maybe a friend in the room who's also doing the work, or maybe by yourself. And just, I felt this connection to each one of you. So I know that we're doing something really unique by having this this international telecall. And at times throughout this workshop, you might be feeling really alone in this work. And I just want you to know that you are part of something really, really powerful. And I feel you, and I know the other people in the group feel you. And so you belong, and we belong in this together. So thank you so much for being here, because I'm really, really honored to just be amongst you. And so going into a little bit of review of what we've already looked at from the first half of There is a Solution, you know, we've been looking at some of the ways that I can start to identify, am I the real one? And, you know, we get this great description. Let me look to see. Yeah, on page 18, we get this great place to take some inventory. You know, we understand that we have an illness. We're suffering from an illness. And it gives lovely description. It's really lovely description. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers, right? It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity. And I have to ask myself, have I been walking around feeling misunderstood by everyone? And that is such a operating platform for me when I am disconnected from God, when I'm really in my disease, is that I feel I'm angry, I'm resentful, I feel entitled, I feel victimized, I feel that life is unfair, you're unfair, and I just feel completely misunderstood, and I am obsessed with you understanding me. And so I overtalk and I overexplain and I get really angry, and this is just one of the many things that I can look at to say, hey, do I really have this thing? Are they talking about me here? And then we get this description of what the real compulsive overeater / restrictor is. And they give us this whole long paragraph that goes into describing the behavior of the real one. And I have to look beyond just the behavior, because some of us, you know, we've already spoken about it before on previous calls, and even in just how each one of you identified yourselves, you know, we don't all say the same thing. You know, some of us are bulimic, some of us have binging purging, some of us are secretive, some of us are, you know, we get angry and belligerent, some of us isolate, you know, we have so many different behaviors. Some of us lose our jobs, some of us lose our relationships, some of us move, some of us get really skinny, some of us get really overweight, some of us fluctuate. And so I can't look at those behaviors to determine whether or not I'm the real one. I have to look beyond that at what we all have in common. And what we all have in common is this loss of control, that once I put either that food into my system or once I skip that meal and I get that thrill and that rush inside my body, or that lightheadedness from not having eaten, once I've gotten a piece of that, do I lose control over the amount that I need to have? And I might just stop this time at one meal. I might just stop at one serving. I might just stop at one bite. But is that always the case? Can I stay stopped? Or do I invariably go back to that behavior if I'm not connected to God? And so that's what I have to get real. Is this talking about me? Am I the real one? And so then we get at the bottom of page 24, when this thinking is fully established in the individual with compulsive overeating, restricting, or body-obsessing tendencies, they've probably placed themselves beyond human aid. And unless locked up, may go permanently. Oh, wait. What am I talking about? I got to move it on back here. I want to go, there we go, page earlier. Here we go. So the bottom of page 22. So they're talking about having gotten to a certain point, and once a certain point is reached, right, we know that while the compulsive overeater, restrictor, body obsessor keeps away from their behavior, as they might do for months or years or days or weeks, right? We might be able to stick to that diet for a certain time frame, or, you know, we might be able to follow that particular plan of abstinence, you know, just using our self-will for a certain amount of time, and we might be able to react much like other people. But we're equally as positive that once we take that compulsive bite or that compulsive action into our system, something happens, both in my body and in my mind, which makes it virtually impossible for me to stop. So that's what they're describing there. That's what I just spoke about that loss of control. And I have to look at my experience. And does my experience show me that? So then, on the top of 23, it says, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took that first compulsive bite or acted out in that way. Why academic? Academic because it's kind of it's in theory. Like, it's like, okay, this is nice information, but it's pointless. Because, like, if I just don't act out, if I don't put that compulsive bite in my system, if I don't skip that one meal, then I won't have this problem. Setting the terrible cycle in motion, right? That terrible cycle of the craving and the obsession and the craving and the obsession and the craving and the obsession. So it says that the problem then can't be just in the body, because otherwise, you know, the equivalent is like, you know, they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, like we'll just drive the drunk out. So maybe I'll just abstain from that particular food or that particular behavior for a certain amount of time, and then I won't have that physical craving in my system, and then I won't act out. But it says it doesn't work that way. Why? Because the main problem for the compulsive overeater, body obsessor, or restrictor centers in her mind rather than in her body. Now, we're going to come to learn later on that it's actually even deeper than my mind. But on page 23, we're looking at the mind, so we're going to be taking it deeper into the mind right now. If you asked her why she started on that last binge, the chances are she will offer you any one of 100 alibis, right? Can I always find that excuse to eat or to act out? Sometimes these excuses have a certain believability, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc that a compulsive overeater's binges create. They sound like the philosophy of a person who, having a headache, beats herself on the head with a hammer so that she can't feel the ache. If you draw this false reasoning to the attention of any compulsive overeater, restrictor, or body obsessor, she will laugh it off or become irritated or refuse to talk. So once in a while, she may tell the truth. And the truth, strange to say, is that she has no more idea why she took that first compulsive bite or skipped that meal than you have. And so we're looking here at our mental obsession. And it tells us in our transcription at the top of this page, I'm just going to read the transcription that hopefully you've already written into your book. Step one, mental obsession of my mind before the first bite or before the first acting out. We use this section as a tool to look at why is it if one reason or another I am symptom-free, I don't act out for any length of time, why can't I stay stopped? So I have to look at, am I mentally powerless over this acting out behavior before I even take that bite, before I even do that behavior? And that's what we're looking at. And so they're starting to present this argument, so to speak, to me of, is it possible that you actually don't know why you do it. You think you know why you do it, right? We've all been to therapy, and we have, you know I'm an emotional eater, and I eat when I'm this, and I do this, and we kind of have all of these like places where we connect the dots. But saying, is it possible that you actually boil it down, don't really know why you're acting out in this way, why you can't stay stopped? Some overeaters, restrictors have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time, like that. Well, you know, I had a long day, and I know that I eat when I have a long day, or I'm feeling lonely, and I know I eat when I'm lonely, or, you know, I know what my triggers are. I've been to therapy. So part of the time, I'm satisfied. But in my heart, right, now getting deeper than the mind, it's in my heart, they really don't know why they do it. Once this malady of the mind has a real hold on me, I'm baffled, right? So this is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's cunning because it always gets me back, and it's baffling because I don't know. I'm baffled. I don't know how it's happened again. And it's powerful because it's more powerful than anything that I know. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. There's the obsession that somehow, someday, I will beat the game. I will control my eating, right? Or I will control my body, or I'll be able to figure this out. And I have that. I have to ask myself, do I sometimes have that? And like, yeah. Usually when I'm physically fit and life is going well, then I feel like I've beat the game. But they often suspect that they are down for the count. And then there's this other part of me that's always waiting for the other shoe to drop, that kind of knows deep down, okay, you're on a good run right now, but I kind of feel like I'm on a good run. So it says how true this is, few realize in a vague way what their families and friends sense, that these are eaters or restrictors, that these eaters and restrictors are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits a day that the sufferer will rouse herself from her laziness and assert her willpower, right? And do I still think that? Is there still a part of me? And, like, this is where I really have to get honest. Like, do I still think that I have, that it's just a matter of willpower? And I'm still, you know, am I still trying to self-will a regimen of discipline? Am I trying to self-will that eating program that somebody told me to do? And am I, like, so stuck in my rigidity, but I don't feel free? Am I trying to white knuckle it? You know, that's what they're talking about here. The tragic truth is if this person is the real one, the happy day may not arrive. She's lost control. So this is a really, really important part what we're getting into right now. At a certain point, in the eating or dieting of every compulsive overeater / restrictor, she passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop acting out is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case before it is suspected. So this is so important, and I have the word desire circled, because the only requirement for membership into this fellowship is a desire to stop compulsively eating or to stop acting out in the way that we act out. And the book is telling me right here that a desire to stop is not going to be enough for me to actually be free and sane for good. It's not enough. And so I have to separate that the requirement for membership is different from the requirement for recovery. And those are two separate things. So the fact is that most compulsive eaters and restrictors, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in food. This is so powerful because what we're working with here is these three words, choice, power, and control. And I'm going to come to learn that I can actually interchange any one of these words. Wherever I see one of the words, I can replace it with one of the other words, and it means the same thing, because if I've lost one, I've lost them all. So I can read this statement as I've lost the power of choice. I can also read it as I've lost power. And I can also read it as I've lost the power of control in whether or not I'm going to act out. And I have to ask myself, am I thinking that I'm choosing? Do I think that I'm choosing to overeat or to restrict or to obsess? You know, I'm choosing to go for that food because I think that I know why I'm doing it. Or is it that I don't have the power to actually do any different? And the first step is all about me seeing where and how I don't have any power. And then steps 2 through 12 are about getting that power. So, but I have to start in this place, and I have to fully get this piece. Otherwise, I'm not going to pursue the rest of the program with the desperation that I need to fully be recovered in mind and body. And so I ask myself this, like, have I chosen in the past, have I made the choice to not overeat? Have I, like, sat down with something, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to overeat this. And then I've overeaten anyway. You know, I get that one thing from the supermarket, and I'm like, no, this time it's going to just stay in my pantry, or it's just going to stay in my fridge. I'm going to be healthy about it this time. I'm just going to have a little bit. I'm just going to have a serving. And then it just doesn't happen that way. And then on the other side, like, you know, why would I actually choose? I don't think that I've ever, like, well, I don't know, maybe I thought that I did. I'm just going to overeat. I'm just going to, like, eat this entire pint of ice cream. I'm just going to, like, yeah, I think sometimes I have, but I have to see that even that, it's like, am I really making a choice, or is there something bigger that's going on here? Is there something deeper going on here? Well, we're going to continue to find out. So these are just questions that we're asking ourselves, right? The fact is, I'm going to read this again because this is squiggly lines. Every time we get italics, you know, it's really important. The fact is that most compulsive overeaters, restrictors, body obsessors, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of control in whether or not they're going to act out. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into my mind with sufficient force the memory and the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against that first diet or compulsive bite. Is that me? Do I always seem to think that it's going to be different? As humiliated and ashamed as I was, as much as I was self-loathing, looking in the mirror, trying to put on that pair of jeans and feeling absolutely shattered, you know, did that deter me, or did I eventually go back? I've written, so I just take a picture of my notes here in this book. I've written and highlighted so much that I'm trying to just review to make sure that I've gotten everything. Yeah, and we're going to be getting the book is going to be giving me some experiments that I can take out there into the world. You know, but one of the ones, and I can just do it kind of in theory, I don't need to necessarily go out and test this, but can I eat abstinently every single day for a year? No God, no program, just using my mind, just waking up in the morning and deciding I'm going to eat abstinently. No prayer, no nothing. Can I do that and feel free? Because I don't know about you, but I can pull off the diet thing, but I'm fucking insane. I'm obsessed. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm full of resentment. I'm full of fear. I've got trouble in personal relationships. Like, that's not recovery. That's, like, self-willing abstinence. So it's saying, like, can I just wake up and just choose to be abstinent, and is that going to be enough? And if that is enough and I'm able to be free and I'm able to feel like I'm, you know, connected and happy and, you know, all this kind of stuff, then maybe I'm not the real deal. know, and maybe some of you still are not sure whether or not you are, and feel free. I would love for you to call me or email me if you are still struggling, like you think maybe you're the real or that you're not sure, maybe you're the hard, you're not sure. Talk to me about it. I would love to chat with you about it so you can find your truth. And if you do know that you're the real one, I would love for you to share your experience on this call today. You know, some of us are really dealing with this actively right now. And what I would offer to all of us, whether or not we consider ourselves recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body or not, is where does this show up today? What's my current first step experience? The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a bite of fill in the blank, right? You know, for me, I wrote seed butter. does not crowd into the mind to deter me. If I start to think it through, this thought is hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time I'm going to handle my eating or my dieting like other people. Like, do I hold on to that? Do I hold on to that? Because this is a really vital point that it makes here, because you hear people saying, you know, especially in AA, but I'm sure we have our own version of it in the various food programs that are out there, of, you know, just think the drink through. Or, you know, maybe it's in kind of like a support group, you know, food setting or something like that, where it's like knowing your triggers. And, you know, we have that halt, what is it, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And I'm not saying that some of these things don't work some of the time. I mean, because I've used them, and they do work some of the time. But am I relying on therapy? Am I relying on those kinds of you know, tools like recognizing my triggers, thinking it through, waking up every single day and just deciding to be abstinent, just deciding not to act out? Like, does that actually work for me? You know, like, I look back at my history, and were there days that I could come home and, I mean, for me, I was like really good at restricting during the day, and then I would come home and I would totally binge because I felt completely justified by the amount of overworking that I was doing and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I just, like, I created this argument. And you know, you can hear me, even in the way I'm describing it, I believe that I know why I did it, right? So this is what we do. We believe that we know why we did it. And I would overeat all this food. Well, so sometimes I could come home and I could be like, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't want to overeat. I don't want a night binge. I'm not going to do it. And I would be able to. You know, I'd be able to, well, what am I right now? Maybe I'm lonely. Okay, maybe I'll be, and I would kind of be able to, like, behavior modify and stuff. But what this is telling me right here is that while that might work some of the time, a day in a time is going to come where that doesn't work, where I cannot connect A to B, where either I, you know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And in the Big Book Awakening, we say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing, knowing the results are going to be exactly what you know them to be and doing it anyway. That's true insanity. And so do I see any of that in my history? You know, yeah, God, this is going to give you a stomach ache. Yeah, you're going to pass out. Yeah, you're going to be miserable. Yeah, your body's going to go through X, Y, or Z. Yeah, you're going to let this person down. You know, like the list goes on and on. And yet I do it anyway. I can't bring into my mind with sufficient reason the pain and humiliation and suffering of even a week or a month ago. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting her hand on a hot stove. With food, I'm burning myself over and over again. And why do I do it? I do it for the effect. You know, I burn my hand on a hot stove. I don't, I'm personally, that doesn't do it for me. You know, like, that doesn't give me the ease and comfort that I want, and I don't do it again. But I get this ease and comfort from the way I act out around food and restricting, obsessing about my body. There's something that I'm getting out of it. The overeater restrictor may say to herself in the most casual way, it won't hurt me this time, right? It won't burn me this time. Or perhaps she doesn't think at all. And can I relate to both of those things? Can I relate to sometimes thinking, okay, I think I can do it this time. You know, I mean, I was just sharing with you all last week that I was doing that with nut butter. And it's really interesting because, like, and I don't know if this is, like, what it's always going to be, but, like, God separated me from that. Like, I haven't even had a desire. In fact, this is the first time thinking of it since I last shared. It became a non-issue. But I remember buying that and being like, okay, I'm just going to have this in my car for when I'm, like, running around and I don't have time to eat something and I just want to have a spoonful of something and whatever. And, like, yeah, that just that doesn't work. And then, you know, other times I'm like, I don't even think at all. You know, I'm eating some food or whatever. I'm eating some dinner and I just am not even thinking. All of a sudden I realize, oh, my gosh, I'm having seconds. Oh, my gosh, I finished that meal, and now I'm, like, standing in the pantry looking for the next thing to eat. How often have some of us begun to eat or restrict in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth serving or skipped meal, pounded on the table and said to ourselves, God's sake, how did this ever get started again? How am I doing this dieting, starving thing again? I was going fine, and then all of a sudden, now I haven't eaten the meal all day long. What is that? You know, how did that happen again? Well, only to have that thought supplanted by, well, I'll stop with the sixth serving or skipped meal. What's the use anyhow? So do I sometimes just give up? Well, I'm already beyond, so I might as well just go and get full and just, like, you know, let it all go. So when this sort of thinking is fully established in a person with compulsive overeating restricting tendencies, she's probably placed herself beyond human aid. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. And so we have this transcription at the bottom. Do I think that anything human can stop that part of me that takes me to that first compulsive bite or that first diet? And I ask myself, if I have a spiritual disease, will anything less than a spiritual solution work to treat this? So at the top of page 25, you know, we get this sentence, so many want to stop but can't. Is that me? I want to stop but can't. And then we get, light at the end of the tunnel. There is a solution. Yay. And then it's going to go ahead and tell me what I don't want to do. And that's okay that I don't want to do it. It's okay if you don't want to do it. They didn't want to do it either. But this is the work. This is it. So almost none of us like the self-searching. Steps 4, steps 5, and 10. The leveling of our pride. Steps 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10. The confession of shortcomings. Steps 5, 9, and 10. Which this process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we'd come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. So this, again, this is giving me this, like, hopelessness, hope contrast right here. This is where I'm getting it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. So what is my problem? Well, I believe, for me, my problem is that I don't have power. I don't have power, I don't have control, I don't have choice, and I keep on doing this thing, and I can't stop. That's my problem. And as a result of my dis-ease, my separation from ease, my life is unmanageable. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. And I don't have the power to change that. I don't have the power to fix myself. That, I believe, is my problem. There was nothing left for us but to pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet. And Dan Sherman always calls these spiritual power tools, and they don't work unless they're plugged into power. I love that. We have found much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. So, you know, when I was reading this earlier today, you know, but we saw that it really worked in others, and I was like, gosh, you know, today I'm baffled by how this program works. When I turn, when I ask, when I get honest, I am provided with exactly what I need in each moment. It's remarkable. And I have access to a relationship with the power that solves all my problems. It blows me away. It absolutely blows me away. And we get this, the fourth dimension, right, the realm of the spirit within. So if you remember back to one of our earlier calls when we were talking about the circle and the triangle, and have I not been living in this three-dimensional world of my physical craving, my mental obsession, and my spiritual malady, and I've just been living in this. And this is telling me right now that I'm going to get a chance to be the dot in the middle of that circle and triangle. I'm going to go and be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, the spiritual realm, of which I had not even dreamed. And this freaking happens. I know some of you were on this call and this has happened to you, and this has happened to me. It absolutely happened to me, and it happens to me over and over again, deeper and deeper every single time I do this work. And it's not bullshit. It's true. The great fact is just this and nothing less. This is a great paragraph to highlight or underline. This is the great fact that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Has that happened to me? And I ask myself, not just as a newcomer, but like wanting this, but if I have time in this program, am I living this? Does this describe me? Does the central fact of my life today is it the absolute certainty that my Creator has entered into my heart and lives in a way, into my heart and into my life in a way which is indeed miraculous? Has God commenced to accomplish those things for me which I could not do by myself? Am I living like that? Because I can tell you right now that I am living like that. And I am awed, and I am humbled, and I continue to do the work, and I sometimes rest on my laurels, and I stumble and all that stuff, but this comes true. This is true for me. And we get this reference to see the appendix on page 567, and so I want to take us to that page because we talk about this this deep and effective spiritual experience, and I feel like it's important to talk about this because the people, most of the examples that they list in the beginning of this book are people who've had this like sudden spiritual awakening, and then like for the rest of their lives, like everything is like peachy keen, or at least that's how it's described in the book. And so it can make me start to think that, well, if it doesn't happen to me like that, then I'm not getting this program, or this program doesn't work. And so they have this awesome appendix on spiritual experiences. I just want to read this to you. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from compulsive overeating or restricting has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many compulsive overeaters and restrictors have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of compulsive overeaters and restrictors, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. So is that me, right? Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of a difference long before she is herself. She finally realizes that she has undergone a profound alteration in her reaction to life. That is true. I don't know about you, but like I only realize I have recovery in something. I only realize that that a fear has been removed when I all of a sudden find myself doing something that before either baffled me or scared the shit out of me and I wouldn't have done. I'm like, oh my gosh, something is working in me that's allowing this to not be baffling and this to be feasible right now, and it's beyond me. And so that's what they're referring to there. That such a change could hardly have been brought about by herself alone. There we go. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identified with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. More emphatically, we wish to say that any compulsive overeater restrictor capable, going to tell me what I need to do, capable of honestly facing her problems in the light of her own experience can recover, provided she does not close her mind off to all spiritual concepts. It's going to tell me many times in this book to lay aside my prejudice, to set aside what I think I know. She can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. Here it is. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. So if you relate more to the educational variety, this is something that you have been learning and acquiring and slowly growing with, expanding and, I can't remember what the word, what the phrase is in step 10. It kind of says it, enlarging my spiritual life. That's what you relate to. They're saying you are spot on right now. Don't go anywhere. So if you are a seriously compulsive overeater restrictor as we were, then we believe that there is no middle of the road solution for me. And it's great. I was listening to Josie's recording on this, and he goes, what happens if you hang out in the middle of the road? You get hit. It doesn't work out well for you if you stand out in the middle of the road. So I just love that because it just gave a great visual. Like, yeah, I'm hanging out in the middle of the road in my program. It's like, it's not going to end well for me. I'm going to get hit. I'm going to get struck back down. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there was no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best that we could, which is denial, right? And the other is to accept spiritual help. So there's two parts to this. Two parts to what I'm about to say. So I need to make sure that I'm not doing a middle of the road program. And what is a middle of the road program? Well, it tells me in my transcription that if I am hearing things that have nothing to do with having a deep and effective spiritual experience, then I'm hearing a middle of the road solution. Okay? So if I am that goes for the work that I do. Is my work centered, and my step work centered around having a deep and effective spiritual experience? Or is my step work centered around you know, kind of like therapy, you know, like writing my life story or things like that. And for me personally, because I started doing the steps that way, it didn't work for me that way. And so, like, I know that I need a step, I need to do my steps that are centered around having a deep and effective spiritual experience. I know that for me. And then the other part of it, too, is am I carrying a middle-of-the-road solution into other meetings or into my sponsorship? So am I not intentionally, but am I sponsoring a way that's making my sponsees dependent upon me? Or am I sharing in a meeting and not speaking about my higher power or my connection or how I was able to create access or access my higher power? I'm not talking about the process involved with having a deep and effective spiritual experience in the meetings, and am I carrying a middle-of-the-road solution? And so we have these two options. And I know that you've written about this in your Idiot's Guide questions, that I have these two options. Like, what's my choice here? Do I want to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of my intolerable situation? Do I want to continue going on this way, being in denial, and really walking around for me like the spiritual dead, or actually dying from medical complications or from, you know, just the insanity of my disease? Or am I willing to accept spiritual help? And it says here, we did this because we honestly wanted to, and we were willing to make the effort. Am I willing to make the effort? You know, I recently, like, just had to really, really get honest about one of the beliefs that I was holding on to. You know, it says that we're going to have this whole rearrangement. We're going to talk about that in a second, that our ideas and emotions and attitudes are going to be rearranged. And one of my beliefs was that I don't want to do the heavy lifting. Like, someone else should do it for me. And that was not just in my step work or my recovery, that was just in life. Like, I just felt like I shouldn't have to work that hard, and things should just come. And it actually was coming from and this is where, for me, the whole new age, like, self-help world can be really detrimental for someone like me because of how my mind can twist it around. And so, you know, this idea that, like, you know, law of attraction and, like, things flow to you if you're putting out the certain energy and whatever, and, like, being in flow and stuff should just happen. If it feels too much, like you're forcing or you're, you know, pushing too much, then it's just not supposed to be and whatever. And so there's some real beauty and some real insight and wisdom to that whole concept and line of reasoning. And I believe that there is something very, very valuable there. But see, what someone like me does with it is I say, oh, okay, so if I'm working hard, then it means that I'm all in self-will, and therefore I shouldn't, if I'm working with God, I shouldn't have to work hard. God should provide, but I shouldn't have to work for it. And I have learned the hard way that it doesn't work that way, at least for me. There's a difference for me between being controlling and trying to manage my life, and then taking responsibility and doing what's mine to do and showing up and doing the work and really sitting in quiet time and asking for guidance and doing my nightly reviews and doing my step work and doing my transcribing and working with others and making the effort to be going to meetings, making the effort to be in the circle and the triangle. So I have to be willing to get honest, and I have to be willing to do the work. And I just want to circle back to human aid. You know, we have this list, this ongoing list that we've been working with of, like, all the things human that aren't going to work for me. And so I already have doctors on there. I already have sponsors and fellowship and things like that. And now I'm adding my mind to it, too, that it's not going to work for me. That I have this mind that can't connect A to B, and I might be able to abstain, I might be able to white knuckle it, I might be able to stick to that diet for a few days, a few weeks, a few months, But a day and a time is going to come, and I'm going to act out. And my mind also likes to tell me that I'm going to know when that's going to happen. Oh, it's going to be a day when, you know, you just had a really bad one, or it's going to be a day when you go through that breakup, or it's going to be, and my experience is that it happens out of the blue. It happens for no reason. Not a cloud in the sky. And then I'll be acting out. It comes out of left field. That's my experience. So then we get a few pages here of this case study of this guy called Roland Hazard. Roland Hazard. It's such a funny name. I'm a rolling hazard. And this guy, so he's a successful businessman, comes from a good, you know, well-to-do family. And so this guy, a little bit of history on him. So he first actually tries to go to, I believe, Freud. And Freud says, no, I don't work with alcoholics. And so he ends up going to Jung out in Europe. And so we hear about his experience with Dr. Carl Jung, you know, this celebrated physician and psychiatrist who we all know about. And he leaves after being in treatment with Carl Jung, and he says his physical and mental condition were unusually good. And above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden spring that relapse was unthinkable. Nevertheless, and apparently the story goes that actually on his boat ride back to the United States, he actually was already drunk. So it says, more baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fall. So what happened? He returns to the doctor. Why can't he recover? He wished above all things to regain self-control. Am I wishing to regain self-control? I mean, I've been there so many times, and I feel like when it comes to food and body and the way I look in the mirror and the way my clothing fits and, like, what media does with, you know, like, we have so much information about diets and weight loss, and, I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry that we are looking at all the time. And do I have this belief deep down that I can regain self-control, that maybe there's, a solution out there, a diet or a plan of eating? I mean, gosh, I was just talking to this friend of mine yesterday, and he was sharing that this like way of eating that he does, and I don't want to go into the details because I don't want to give anyone any ideas. But he was talking about this like method of eating, and it had a certain name to it. And he's like, yeah, it was great. I lost 10 pounds, and you know, I've just recently stopped doing that because I'm working out with this person, and they said that I need to have more whatever in my diet. And there I went in my mind. I'm like, ooh, maybe that could work for me. You know, like, it's just, I'm so easily like, ooh, wow, that person looking really good. What do you do over there? What are you eating? Oh, what, like, I'm fascinated, you know? So above all things, he wished to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems. Is that me? And yet had no control whatever over eating or restricting. Why was this? He begged the doctor to give him the whole story. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. Right? There we get that word again, hopeless like Bill. And it's actually interesting because Roland Hazard actually, he later carried the message to the Oxford group, and that's where Ebby Thatcher got the message, who then carried it to Bill. So he actually precedes these guys. So he could never regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the great physician's opinion. But this man still lives and is free. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where other free men may go without disaster. And I have that experience today, that there was a time when I was kind of a little shaky and like I wouldn't go into certain places, you know, certain restaurants or certain, you know, certain situations that just felt like a little bit too trigger happy for me. But today I feel very free to be able to walk anywhere on this earth. And I trust that I have a power that will carry me through that, provided that I turn. And that's what it tells me. Without disaster provided, he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. And you can just make a little note there for yourself. That simple attitude is something we're going to talk more about on page 55. It has to do with the set-aside prayer. So some of our compulsive overeater, restricting friends may think that they can do this without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation. Okay. The doctor says, you have the mind of a chronic compulsive overeater restrictor. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind exists in the extent that it does in you. He says, is there no exception? And the doctor says, yes, there is an exception. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times here and there, once in a while. We're not having these all the time, but back then maybe it was once in a while. Compulsive overeater restrictors have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, he says, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, my thoughts, emotions, my feelings, and attitudes, my beliefs, which are once the guiding forces of our lives, are suddenly cast to one side. And a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them. Casting to one side, we're going to get this word again in the fifth step. They're going to be cast out. These defects are cast out. You know, this terminology is not terminology that I've ever heard in a therapy setting. It's not terminology that I hear in, you know, like the mental realm, the emotional mental realm. I don't hear that. This term, casting out, to me implies something that is beyond, it's like of the spiritual realm. It's something that's mystical. It's something that's beyond me. And that's what it's saying, that there's something that's beyond me that's part of the mystical realm that is going to rearrange and change things. And I know I give this reference all the time, but I just love it, is the snow globe. And like something, some power is picking up me, the snow globe, and shaking me, and everything's going to get rearranged and resettled, and all of a sudden, when everything settles back down, the way that I think, feel, and believe is going to be different. It's going to be rearranged. So this is a great place to inventory. What are my current thoughts and feelings and beliefs? You know, do I feel like the world owes me? Do I feel like I'm not enough? Do I feel like I'm too much? Do I feel like this will never work for me? You know, what are my current thoughts? What are my current beliefs? Do I feel like if I give my program up to God, you know, if I hand my food over to God, as we like to say, if I hand my weight over to God, that God will make me fat, or God will make me thin, or whatever. You know, do I fear that God's going to do something for me? God's going to ask me to do something that I don't want to do. So I have this belief. I have a belief that God wants me poor. You know, a big, big nut for me that I've like recently just moved through as a result of doing my step five, you know, four, five, six, and seven, is this belief that that to do God's work, I'm not going to be able to, like, financially earn a living. Like, I can't make money doing God's work. And so I had this huge resentment. And so that's something that I have, like, just recently moved through. So it's a great place to take some inventory. What am I holding on to? In fact, so the doctor says, I have been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangements within you. With many individuals, the methods which I employed are successful, but I've never been successful with a compulsive overeater restrictor of your description. So this is just so fascinating, because if you remember back to the doctor's opinion, Dr. Silkworth says you need this, you know, this vital spiritual experience, because he's looking at the body. Your body has this physical craving. It's got this addiction, and you need, in order to be able to get recovered from this, you need a vital spiritual experience, and I can't provide that for you. And I've been trying, and I can't provide that for you. And here now we get Dr. Carl Jung, who we've all heard of, and he's looking at it through the mind. And he says, I get that you are hopeless. Just the same way Dr. Silkworth saw the hopelessness in the body, Dr. Carl Jung sees the hopelessness in the mind. I get that you're hopeless. You need a vital spiritual experience. And I can't do it for you. And so you get these two renowned doctors who say, this is beyond me. Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that, after all, he was a good church member. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctors telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. So that's a really important one, too. Some of us are just, like, pissed off at God, and we don't have God. But I believe there's a lot of us who actually do believe in God, who do believe in a higher power, who have some kind of semblance of a relationship with this power, and are like, well, what the fuck? Why isn't this working? I believe in God, and this isn't working. And so the question that I write in my book here is it possible that while I may have belief, I don't yet have access? So I believe that these steps are about getting unblocked so that I can move from belief to reliance. And is it possible that I don't yet have all of the tools to be able to fully rely on God yet, that I don't have access, that I'm somehow blocked from access even though I have belief? And we'll talk more about that in We Agnostics, but I just want to plant that little seed there. Here was the terrible dilemma which our friend found himself. And I just highlighted terrible dilemma because we're going to get the word dilemma again later on in the book. And, you know, dilemma, whenever I see the word dilemma, it's a problem. It's not just a problem, it's a dilemma. Because a dilemma is like, I don't want either option. And so my either option here is, do I want denial and death, or do I want spiritual help? Dilemma. Because I don't want to hand out, even though my life is broken and moth-eaten and, you know, shit's not going well, it's like, but this is my life. This is what I know. You know, we're so defensive of our life or who we think we are. So we, in turn, on the top of page 28, we, in turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning people. And I love this line. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given, or if you prefer, has been given up, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. And I just love that. This program is going to teach me how to do life, because I don't know how to do life. And I'm going to get that as a result of doing this work, not just know how to eat right or know how to not over diet or, you know, any of those things. This is actually going to teach me a design for living, how to take myself out there into the world in all my affairs. So let me get this distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book Varieties of Spiritual Experience, indicates a multitude of ways in which people have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If we have learned and felt and seen, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a loving Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon a simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. So the transcription that we write in at the bottom of the page kind of rewords that a little bit to make it more clear. If I am willing and honest enough to try, there is a simple, understandable way for me to form a relationship with a living creator that I will be able to feel and see. And there is a way that faith can be required that we will look at in these steps, a process to go from belief to faith. So good. So good. If I'm willing and honest enough to try, that's all I need, be willing and honest enough to try. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair, which each one decides for herself in the light of past associations or her present choice. So really, this is your opportunity to create a conception that works for you. And then it goes on to tell you what I'm going to experience in the next few chapters. In the following chapter, there appear an explanation of restricting and food and body addiction as we understand it, right? We get the more about chapter. And then a chapter addressed to the agnostic. And I might be sitting here today not thinking that the agnostic applies to me, that term applies to me, but I'm going to come to find that for me personally, every time I do this work, I discover deeper and deeper levels of how agnosticism runs through me and where it runs through me and where I'm currently not bringing God into my life. Many who were once in this class of agnosticism are now among our members, and surprisingly enough, we find such convictions no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. So, and then it's going to go in, and it's got the 42 personal stories, and, it shows just different examples of how people have come to find God. If this is something that you struggle with, it might be worth reading some of those stories, and maybe you might hear your own story in that. I'm kind of reading it the way we did with Bill's story. Our hope is that many compulsive overeaters and restrictors desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems, and that's what I do with you all, I fully disclose myself and my problems, that you'll be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. So much incredible, incredible information here, and I really, really would love to hear from some of you. Please, Star 6, unmute yourselves and share. And, I would love to hear people's answers to the 80th Guide questions. I'm going to just pose one or two questions and feel free to either answer those questions or just to share your own experience with do I see that I have this loss of control, loss of power, loss of choice, right? Or you can also speak into is anything less than a spiritual experience going to work for me? So I'm just going to, so you can speak, that's the kind of the topic today. So you can either just speak generally about your experience with any of that, or you can answer specifically one of these questions. So I'm just going to pose the question, did you ever decide to quit for good, to not even take one compulsive bite? And did this work for you, or did you act out again? Go ahead and star six yourself to unmute yourself.
Lauren?
Hi, Lauren. Lauren.
Hi.
Hi, Lauren.
Well, from what you said, like what you just talked about, what you just talked about, what I realized is that I'm using my eating program now as a diet. Mm. And I'm going out to lunch with a friend in a week, and I'm counting the number of days that I have been good on this diet, mm-hmm. planning for the day that I can overeat when I go out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have this other feeling of really wanting to lose weight because I just didn't recognize myself in the mirror a couple weeks ago because I had just eaten a lot. And so I've used program a lot that way, a lot as a diet mentality. I understand the spiritual part, and I love the spiritual part, but the food part of it for me has always been a real challenge, which is why I would binge, especially after I weigh. I always binged after I weigh, and I'm not weighing now. And I feel much more peaceful about food. And I'm about food and planning to do things, you know, after I weigh. I'm so much happier not weighing. And my food is so much better, and my head is too. Nothing else has really worked. I mean, you asked about the idiot's guide questions and, you know, do I think that I can stay stopped? I think I can stay stopped for a very finite amount of time, but not as a lasting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you said when you said, I may have belief, but not access yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really got what you said today. And then in speaking with my partner, my writing partner, you know who you are, she told me that based on her observation of knowing me, that she hears that I do things based upon what other people think.
Mm.
And it's pretty darn true.
Mm.
So, and I was grateful to hear that. It's true. I feel like I was blessed to hear it, actually. So this is kind of this week, and this work has kind of been like a rearranging of thoughts and considerations in my mind.
Mm. Awesome.
So, that's it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Lauren. Thank you. Great, great. Who else wants to share? Were there times when you stayed abstinent or controlled your eating only to be followed by worse relapse? You can answer that, or you can just share your own experience.
This is Jack. Can you hear me?
Hey, Jack. Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, you know, I've been abstinent 1,000 times, over 1,000 times. And I've read this book Inside Out, and I've done the steps. I can't seem to get the connection with the higher power that you have, that you sound so clear about. I don't get mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. I know I'm out here floundering around, and one minute I think I got it, and then I don't. I try not to eat out. The minute I eat out, or I have an emotional crisis, or I have customers that are trying to manipulate me or lie to me, I lose it.
Mm-hmm.
I lose my abstinence. And then it just starts catapulting again, even while I'm doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
I feel stuck. But, I mean, like what you said, just the capacity to be honest. And the willingness, I keep coming back. So, anyway, I'm done. Thanks.
Thanks, Jack. Thank you for that share. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to both to what Lauren and Jack just shared. Thank you for that.
So who wants to answer? Have you tried to assert your willpower to stay stopped? Did it work?
Debbie, this is Katie G. from Boston. May I share?
Of course, Katie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Katie G., and I'm a compulsive overeater, food addict, and I feel like I've tried to assert my willpower my entire life over food. Like, I don't remember a time. Like, my first diet was, like, let me drink some cold water and just try and push the food down. And then like, I can just will myself into not eating. Or, like, if I'm a good, you know, if I'm a good Catholic girl like the neighbors, then I won't need to eat. And how many, like, I can name every single diet out there that I went on. And then at one point in college, I had gotten my weight down to, well, I got really, really anorexic in high school, and then in a period of 10 months in college, I put on 100 pounds, and so because I was, like, eating like an animal. And then I decided to go to Malawi, Africa, right, because if you go to Malawi, Africa, like, yeah, I'll help people who are starving and dying from HIV and AIDS and awful diseases, but maybe in a third world country, I can't eat, right? Well, I went to Malawi, Africa, and found I'm in a third world country where there's no electricity, and yet I found ways to eat. And I, you know, like, was continuously dumbfounded because my ideas and my will exerting all over my food addiction did not work over and over again. And the last time I relapsed, I was convinced, like, I was like, I'm done, I have enough knowledge, I'm done, and I walked right into this convenience store, I was on the phone with a friend of mine in program, and the next thing I knew, I was eating, and I just know, like, I have no power, choice, or control when it comes to the food, and my willpower, it just doesn't work, and it was so confusing to me and so mind-blowing that, like, because I was raised in this household where it's like, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and just do it, eat in moderation, just do it. And you know, in my adult life, that has brought me to 228 pounds and 110 pounds. I have no power, no choice or control around this food, and no amount of willpower will save me.
Thank you for your share, Katie.
Thank you.
So who else wants to share either on the same thing? Have you tried to assert your willpower to stay stopped? Or the next question, are you powerless over whether you will start? Have you lost control over staying stopped? So who can relate to being able to stop but then has no control over starting up again? Yeah, who but so?
Hey, this is Lisa from Atlanta. Oh, sorry.
Oh, we got two people. So someone from Atlanta, Lisa from Atlanta, and who else?
This is Stephanie from California.
Okay, perfect. So let's have Lisa go first and then Stephanie share afterwards.
Hey, I'm Lisa, and I have kind of a different experience. Most of my food addiction has been around anorexia, and so it's always been, like, the self-will to go into a situation and eat and be normal and, you know, it, which has pushed me into bulimia, because then once I do eat, it's this horrible fear, fear, and it's so incredibly unrealistic. But I know that for me now, in following, you know, a plan, it is like a diet, and it's so incredibly restricting, and it's the obsession. Like, I don't want to regain control because I've never had control. I just want the obsession lifted so badly because I feel like it's just, I don't know. I don't have much to say. I just felt like I needed to say something.
I really want you to share. I've got some questions for you, actually, because I feel like your experience can really help other people who are trying to find their way with anorexia as well. So continue.
Because for me, once it stopped working, then it led to other substances that would just, you know, perpetuate that, and just this incredible fear it gets so incredibly confusing because, you know, you talk about you're trying to put pants on and then they're too big and then that's bad because you don't want people to think that you're not eating, and it's just to a point where I can't function.
Mm-hmm.
So I get scared, and when you were sharing, I get scared because it's like I get afraid that I don't even try to exert self-will anymore because I know mm-hmm. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no control. And I don't have much of an understanding of abstinence, and my sponsor is really, really helping me with that this week, mm-hmm. which has been awesome. So, yeah. I don't have much else to say.
That's so great. So just really quick, so how does the mental obsession work for you? Do you, because it sounds like what I'm hearing, because, you know, the part of the mental obsession that says it's going to be different this time, or the part of the mental obsession that doesn't even think, and it just you find out you're acting in it, but I almost hear that real insanity where it's, I know the consequences and I can't not do it.
That's what I love about BBA is because I've always thought that. The insanity is I do the same thing over and over and over again, knowing how it's going to end. Like, mm-hmm. I know it's, you know, I don't even think anymore that I'm going to be able to go to Thanksgiving and have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be miserable,
mm-hmm.
you know? And mm-hmm. so... it's just,
yeah.
But at the same time, I know it works because my obsession for alcohol has been lifted. But the whole process is I still struggle with whether or not I want to give it up because it's all I know.
Right. And that, thank you for saying that. And that I feel like, you know, for those of us who are in the conversation of, I'm doing this work, I'm trying, and it's not working, and I keep on, you know, relapsing, and I'm relapsing even when I'm trying to do this work, and it's like there's that nugget right there of like, yes, but there might still be a little nugget that I'm holding on to of self-will that says, I don't want to fucking give this up, because if I give this up, then let's really talk about out of control. You know, I'm still trying to hold to that piece of control. Thank you for speaking into that, because I think a lot of people can probably relate to that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Stephanie.
Hi. the thing that I was thinking about is I went to 12-step programs for food for years, and I would hear people would say, we don't eat no matter what. And
mm-hmm.
As much as I tried to use that, it never kept me from going face down in the food. And so I went through these things that I would do, like, you know, I would just, like, make these declarations. One thing I declared was, well, everybody in the room must be lying. There's just absolutely
mm-hmm.
no way that people who are claiming to be having freedom from food, they can't actually be free. And so
mm-hmm.
I went around like that thinking everybody was lying, and then I started lying too.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't help me. And then... and then the other thing of it was that I started to declare, well, the reason why I can't get this is because I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest.
Mm-hmm.
So then that was just a way for me to hurt myself and, you know, to just be resigned.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until very, very recently, like starting to do this work, where things started to fall in place, where I started to see myself and started to see really the reason why maintaining abstinence for any length of time has never been sustainable for me, because mm-hmm. I was never seeking a spiritual solution.
Mm.
I had belief, but I didn't have reliance for sure. For sure, for sure. I didn't have a faith that worked under all conditions, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I love this. I love this work, and it's like a real challenge for me to just kind of just do this work with the utmost humility, like really laying aside everything, because, you know, my problem is I think I know shit,
mm-hmm.
and as soon as I start to think that I know, I'm really screwed. I can go on and on and on about what I think I know, but the self-knowledge really isn't what's brought any kind of freedom. So I'm looking forward to continuing to do this work. It's, you know, I do have a tendency to, like, you know, I kind of start doing different kinds of work, and I think, wow, this is the best ever. But I really do think this is, like, really the best. I mean, it's really spoken to me in a way that nothing else has. So that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Stephanie, thank you so much for that share. And I know, like, that is such a big thing that I hear when I'm working with people, and like this theme comes up all the time where it's like, yeah, I got God. I get that piece, but like I really need to manage my food right now. So can you help me with that? You know, and like it's actually the other way around, you know, that's kind of what you were saying, where no, it's actually the program is in really having a look at, do I just believe, am I truly relying on God, and what does that actually mean? Do I even understand what it means to rely on God? And do I need to set aside everything I think I know about what my relationship with God is, or what believing in or relying on or having access to God is even about? And that humility that you mentioned of just, okay, I get that whatever I thought up until now and however I've been living up until now has only taken me as far as I have gotten now. And in order for me to go further, I'm going to have to set aside everything I think I know so that I can be moved to a new place. And so I hear that in your share, and I really appreciate that in your share. In the past, before you took the first bite or skipped the first meal, did the knowledge of what might happen stop you? Based on your own experience, is there any reason why thinking it through, and I know a couple of you have already spoken about that, will ever work in the future? Thinking it through, using my mind, will that ever work in the future?
Lauren. This is Lauren.
Hi, Lauren.
Thinking it through has worked for me in the future, especially when I reach out, because unlike some of the other people's experience, I don't suddenly find myself in the food. I find that I think about what I'm going to be eating days before I start doing it. So it's being planned in my mind. It starts with a thought. And if I don't out the thought, then I'm probably pretty screwed. So thinking it through has worked for me in calling people and reaching out and saying, you know, the thought that I have. And I also want to share that a person who's a long-timer in program once said to me, have you really conceded to yourself that you're a compulsive overeater? Because when I can see that to myself, and I can do that for a couple moments, and in those moments when I do, that is when I truly surrender and I realize I don't have any control over this. And it actually gives me a lot of comfort. It's thinking that I do have control that makes me hold on to my old ideas about food and about my emotions and what I and the self-knowledge that I have, which certainly avails me nothing.
Yeah. Can I, hey, Lauren, are you still on the phone? Are you there? Nope. Gone?
No, I'm here. Yeah.
Oh, you're here. Can I play with you a little bit? Can I ask you a little question?
Yeah.
So, because you're speaking into exactly what, you know, yes, like we're talking about the mental obsession before we actually act out. And so, but the piece about, do I have control? Like I like to tell myself that I'm controlling the thought process of planning out my next binge. But even though I'm already in, for me, once I'm already in the thought process of binging, like I'm already in it. You know what I mean? Like I'm already beyond, like it's already happening. But do I actually, I think what they're asking in this section is, do I actually, am I choosing to binge? Do I actually have control in that decision, in that choice? Or is there something else going on that is deeper than that? Am I actually doing that because I am powerless to do any different, and yet I am telling myself that I have a conscious choice in that behavior? That's the consideration that they're just putting out there. So I'm just putting it out there as kind of something, because I know you mentioned earlier that you're kind of just considering a lot right now and kind of putting things up and kind of weighing it and just kind of seeing what. So I just wanted to plant that there as just something to kind of play with as you're in your consideration.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah. So just kind of marinate with that and just kind of see how that lands for you. Yeah.
So is the plan within my control?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they're getting at here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thank you for allowing me to just kind of play with you there a little bit. So who wants to share on... Spirit, do you believe anything less than a spiritual experience will save you? You know, here we are recognizing that, the we've got two doctors now that are telling us that we need a vital spiritual experience. And do I believe that I need a vital spiritual experience? Do I believe that that's not true? What's your relationship with that statement?
Hi, it's Lynn, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thank you, Debbie. This is really a great meeting. And I just wanted to throw out there, I just wanted to thank everybody that reached out to me last week after I shared, because I'm really feeling a fellowship amongst the people on the phone. And I didn't get back to everybody, but a few people reached out, and I just really, really appreciated that. And so thank you. And I wanted to, before I answer that question, I just wanted to talk about the thinking it through for a moment. Because you also mentioned in the very beginning about the halt, the hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And thinking it through for me does not consistently work. It has worked sometimes, you know, temporarily, but it's not constant. Because when I'm really separated from the sunlight of the spirit, and excuse my language, I don't give a fuck. I mean, it's just, I can think it through. I can know what I'm going to get. I mean, sometimes I know and I remember that when I eat certain foods, I lose control. But in the moment, in the moment sometimes I go, no, but I can handle it this time. I mean, that's the cunning, baffling, powerful aspect of this disease. So that's, but then hungry, angry, lonely, tired, how that helped me when I was abstinent and I was free from the obsession, it was part of my pause. If I could gain awareness about, am I too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, then that's when I knew to reach out to fellows, or that's when I knew to, you know, if I had direct access, could really sit and pause and ask for guidance. But one of my first sponsors in program told me that when I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, I lose the power of choice. And that hit me hard in the very beginning, because that's what I have to watch for, because that's when I'm really spiritually separated, and those are things to look out for. So in that regard, that has helped me in the past, and it's actually a kind of a good reminder for me now, as, you know, I'm trying to get abstinent again. And just to segue into, you know, needing a spiritual experience, I mean, I absolutely am the real deal, and I see it in all my self-knowledge of being in this program a few years and being in, you know, CA for several more years and having spiritual experiences and feeling the freedom. That is absolutely my only solution, because I see just in this relapse how the depths of despair, how quickly I get there. And I've made promises, and I've tried to self-will back into abstinence, and, you know, saying, okay, it's only 20 or 25 pounds. It's not the 110 you lost. It's not that big of a deal. You can do it. And, you know, my mind plays with me, and I make all these promises to myself, and I mean well, but I cannot do well. I just absolutely cannot do well. So I am so clear that my only solution is a spiritual experience. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. I would love to hear from someone who wants to share about their experience with maybe being in certain meetings or being part of a certain fellowship or being in, you know, kind of a sponsorship relationship where they felt like they were, and this, I don't want this to go into a bashing kind of conversation, but kind of comparing like what a middle of the road recovery experience has felt like, or what their experience is when they have not been around a message that was really, really focused on a vital spiritual experience and how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience. So I would love anyone to share on that.
Deb, this is Katie. May I share?
Absolutely.
So it's a little bit different. I was a member of a food fellowship, and I still follow their food plan, and they had the messages of, you know, don't eat no matter what, no matter what, don't eat. And what happened to me, and I don't think it was that particular format problem, it was mine, like, I just heard what they were saying and, like, do all the tools every day, and my controlling nature, because I'm, like, a controller, anorexic, like, and then I go to the other extreme, was, like, I just thought, if I did the tools enough and followed the food plan, I would be okay, right? Like, and what ended up happening is everybody in that fellowship became my God, and then outside issues became my God. So, like, I would find someone who had what I wanted, like, they were in a thin body, and they were married, and so somehow they were cured, right? And so I was doing my food plan, and then I was like, well, they're born-again Christians, so I must be born-again, too. And that didn't work for me, right? Like, and there's nothing wrong with born-again, but I'm not a born-again Christian. And so I would, like, go to the outside resources thinking, and just, like, and I, you know, they said 3 phone calls a day, and I was doing, like, the sober dial, you know, like, where I would just,
I would stay on the phone all day just to be okay, like just to be okay no matter what. And as an abstinent woman, like, I was fired from 4 different jobs. I was in a relationship with a married man. I had friends, you know, that said that allowed me, they didn't say it was okay, but because of my manipulation skills, were kind of co-signing my stuff, you know. And so the problem is that I didn't know what I'm really coming to is, like, I didn't know how to have a relationship with God. Like, I talked about God. I gave good lip service to God, but me and God, like, face-to-face or whatever it was, you know, like, however God comes to me, like, I couldn't access that vital experience that I need to have with God. And, you know, until I heard the message of depth and weight out of the big book, like, I didn't know that I had some work to do to get to God, that I was so blocked by the lies in my head, you know, about how other people were not, you know, meeting my expectations ever, and, you know, just the resentment, fear, all the stuff that we get into when we do the work. And so, it did not work for me until I really heard people who were, you know, as hopeless as me, but, like, living life, who were as hopeless as me in their mind, in abstinence, and totally crazy in a state of stone-cold abstinence, away from the food, but feeling like they were dying. It was a living death. So that's what I got. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Katie. And as you were sharing, what came to me as you were sharing was, like, what my spiritual experience with God this morning was, which was, like, because I feel like this term, vital spiritual experience and spiritual awakening and all of these things, they sound so big and, you know, like these big, massive things. And I was like, gosh, that's not how it looks for me in my day-to-day. Like, my access and my access to and my relationship with the God of my understanding is, it's so intimate and it's so personal and it's like this morning I was writing a freaking resentment inventory because I'm human and I get pissed off and I do my review and I realize this shit's blocking me. Like, how can I jump on the phone with you guys? How can I continue to show up in the 5 steps that I've been listening to, you know, last week and that I'll be listening to next week? And, like, holding on to this nut of resentment, today, that is not a way that that feels good for me to move in the world. I don't hold on to resentment anymore. I have this relationship with God, and so my vital spiritual experience this morning was writing a freaking inventory. And it's practical. This program is practical, and so sometimes these terms can sound really, like, out there. But what I come to experience is that it really is in, like, the moment-to-moment practicality of it. And I, a few of you have mentioned, and I know, Lynn, you were talking more specifically about HALT, and I know that I think Lauren was also mentioning something. And I believe that a huge benefit and way that I consider myself recovered in this program from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body is that today I have the ability to be able to pause and to consider, wow, what really is going on beneath whatever behavior is happening up here? What is, oh my gosh, wow, I really am holding on to this resentment, or I really am lonely, or whatever it is. And so you're absolutely right that one of the benefits of actually having recovery in this program is that we even are able to pause and assess those things. And so I use that quite a lot, is being able to check in and, through the connection that I have with God, the fact that I'm even able to get honest and actually be able to experience, like, oh, wait a second, there's a spiritual dilemma that needs to be worked through, because I'm over here in, you know, focusing on, like, how can I
modify my diet so that I can lose weight, and that's actually not the conversation. The conversation is, no, how can I get right with God? How can I make amends? What is the truth for me to see in the spiritual context? And once that is fleshed out, and once that is aligned, then somehow the food and the body stuff is just, it just sort of falls into place. Like, it doesn't really, I don't really have to focus on that, and yet that just works as a byproduct of really being in the spiritual program. So thank you, everybody who shared today, your contribution. Do we have any other burning desires to share? There's some really, really awesome things that have been shared today. Anyone feel like they want to share? Okay, well, I know I want to leave a couple of minutes to talk about some logistical things, and I also just want to end with this, that I was realizing today as I was eating my lunch, and I was sitting down, and I was saying a prayer, and I was just having a moment there with God before I started eating, and I just considered, I'm like, God, for me today, eating is a spiritual experience. And I guess, you know, I could also say that the way that I was eating in the past was a spiritual experience too. It was just I was on the other side of that spiritual experience. But it definitely was a spiritual experience because it was something that was eventually took me closer to God. I was having an experience of what being disconnected from God felt like. But today I bring God in. And when I turn... when I ask, I receive exactly what I need. And I'm not saying that God's a Santa Claus God and I ask for something that I want and then it shows up on my doorstep. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say. But I turn and I ask God for guidance and I am filled with whatever it is that I need in that moment. I'm provided. And I'm blown away with the way that God has moved and shown up in my life, in the way that I eat, and just in my experience of myself and all of you. It's mind-blowing. So thank you, everybody, who shared again. And so we're moving into more about in the next assignment. So we're in assignment 7, more about compulsive eating and restricting. We're doing the first half, and so just check your assignment 7 for that. Meet with your step partner if you are still needing a step partner or still needing to switch your step partner for one reason or another. Contact me. I also just want to take this time to apologize for some of you have reached out to me, and I think I've gotten back to everyone, and if I haven't, I apologize, and just please stay on top of me. I'm listening to Fifth Steps. I've been listening to Fifth Steps for the past week and a half, and I'm going to be next week, and I just I kind of forget if I haven't responded to something. So please stay on top of me. And I think that is it. So let's close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. And just before I close off the meeting, I just want to, is there anything else? Oh, yes. Okay, great. So my workshop recordings are now on the bbastuff.com website. So what I'm going to do is I will still send all of you the playback email, and then sometime in the week, the recording will be up on the bbastuff.com website for you to listen to. And I know some of you weren't able to download my recording, but when you listen to it on the bbastuff.com website, you were able to. there's one recording that for some reason the link is off, and I'm going to troubleshoot that. That's the doctor's opinion link, so I will troubleshoot that. But very excited that this work is now on that website so people can listen to it all over. Okay, so if you'll join me in the set-aside prayer, I mean not the set-aside prayer, the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me, and thank you for taking this time with you for you, and thank you for sharing so that everybody can hear and really gain from your experience, strength, and hope. All right, I'll speak with you next time. Bye-bye.